Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mark, Rebecca, you know, we've been discussing the EB5 Reform and Integrity Act over and over again, but we talk about it for a reason, because that really is what is going on right now in the EB5 industry. And one of the big issues that we have seen recently is this huge rural push.
You know, Mona, you and I also have had how many discussions pre-RIA, whether or not rural projects are viable. How many times have we had that discussion?
That's right. And the reason being, we've often compared real estate projects, apples for apples. So you put a large apartment building in the middle of Manhattan and you put a large one in the middle of a rural area. And whether Senator Grassley likes it or not, the investors are going to flock to Manhattan because they know they can get their money's worth. So I think that is one of the big issues now that we are seeing with this push to rural, not just because of the visas, which we'll discuss shortly, but because we really want to see, are they viable?
Remember back in 2020, just after COVID, we had one podcast discussing all these different types of projects as well. So, you know, we're not only seeing now real estate projects, but we're seeing so many different types coming out. We've seen pharmaceutical, we've seen transportation, we've seen so many, and we've had discussions on non or counter cyclical industries. Today, we're going to have another industry that could probably fit the bill on this one.
I think this defines counter-cyclical, actually.
For our listeners out there, just to kind of remind you on counter-cyclical is for any industries out there that have actually done well during an economic downturn. So it's continually doing well throughout the good times and the bad times.
It's important because EB5 investments go on for so many years, and with USCIS delays, etc., you want to make sure that the project has the cash funds to pay you back. And at the end of the day, if you're waiting, if it's a holiday destination and you're just waiting for an upturn, and it might not ever happen.
Well, you know, Mark, Mona, today we're going to go into a whole new topic, a new industry that we can kind of discuss counter-cyclical, but it's going to be a really good exploration into renewable energy and solar energy industry.
I agree, Rebecca, that this episode will be a great exploration into solar energy. In fact, I think it will be enlightening to many EB5 Investment Voice listeners. Today, we are joined by John Mangle, the founder and CEO of Phoenix Development Partners. With a wealth of experience spanning over 3 decades in commercial real estate, he's known for shedding light on hidden, untapped, or underdeveloped value. But what really sets him apart is his recent foray into the world of renewable energy. He's a true luminary on solar energy opportunities in the United States and a beacon for sustainable investments for foreign investors. John, welcome to EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you for having me on.
John, thank you. And you are really one of the industry experts in this area, in solar energy. And I understand you yourself have invested heavily into this with your own personal funds. Can I ask why?
I have, Mona. I'm a big believer in renewable energy. I believe the planet needs to go green. And I believe the usage of energy is all going to increase dramatically in years to come.
Well, I do know that these macro events that you're really referring to are pushing us into renewable energy. But still, is it not cheaper to just use oil and gas? That's something that everybody knows?
It's possible to use oil and gas, but look at the price changes. It's gone from about $2.24 per gallon in 2020 to over $4 a gallon currently. And right now we're seeing oil and gas prices increase given what Russia's doing and Iran's doing to the global oil pricing.
But don't you think at any time, do you think that could always come back down?
It could, but again, we have the macro global climate issues as well as the economic issues.
Yeah, that's a big point. That's a very good point. Global climate warming is a big deal.
I mean, if you look at the hurricanes we've had, the flooding, the droughts, the shrinking of the polar ice caps, you know, global climate change is real, in my opinion. And so we really need to get off of fossil fuels. And they may come down in pricing, but there's going to be so much more demand for electricity every day with the advent of artificial intelligence, more Zoom calls, more streaming. You know, everybody needs more and more power every day. So the demand's going to keep increasing. So we got to increase supply as well.
That's true. That happened after COVID. We have seen a lot more demand in electricity just because more people are still at home.
You get 100 That's people right. in 100 houses versus 100 people in one corporate building. Yeah. It turns out a lot of people still like having the lights on.
Before we go any further, we started off by discussing why rural projects, what the big deal is with rural projects. And for any of our listeners out there who are still not quite sure what we are talking about, even though that really means you haven't listened to our podcast lately, Rebecca, why is rural such a big deal in EB5 right now?
Such a big deal because RIA has brought in these new categories. And whereas, as many of you know, with the visa bulletin, it basically became a new starting point for any countries that were in backlog in EB5. So any person shooting for rural TEA or infrastructure projects, there's no backlog for India or for China. And why rural is more popular at this point is because there's also priority processing. So not only are you going to have visas available, you potentially have the ability of getting a visa faster in the rural category. It's the set aside categories.
And we are seeing it. Rural petitions have been approved in 11 months, which is unheard of. And bear in mind that we are still dealing with old petitions back from 2017, 2018, and early 2019. To have something adjudicated in 11 months is certainly a reason to go into that area.
Oh, yeah. You're probably looking at clients in the old pre-RIA wanting to start investing in rural and TEA projects or even infrastructure, which hasn't even been hardly touched at this point. But you're going to see jumps in these categories.
So, John, we've been discussing this for a long time. Rebecca and I have discussed, we've written, we've researched, and it's always been the case that the viability of the urban has overtaken the viability of the rural. But energy is a little different. Perhaps you could explain.
Sure. Everybody needs energy, and especially solar energy. The Biden administration has mandated that we increase renewable energy production in this country substantially, and they've incented us to do it. They've provided incredible tax incentives to help finance the growth of renewable energy.
How is it going to be viable in rural areas?
Well, you need significant tracts of land to do these large-scale solar farms. Mm-hmm. Or if you're doing wind, you need large tracts of wind to do wind farms. And so the simplest solution is to put them in rural areas and then have the electronic transmission lines connect the power from the farms to the cities. So it's very similar to agricultural farms. In this case, it's just energy farms. So we're going to connect the rural to the urban.
Well, if we look at solar, John, I was under the impression that most of the solar plants or most of the solar infrastructure had come in from China and that the U.S. really didn't have too much.
The U.S. has an ever-growing amount of U.S. solar farms. The big issue, Mona, has been the production of the panels. And historically, there was more panel production in China, et cetera. But again, the Biden administration has done a significant job incenting the growth of U.S. solar panels. In fact, I believe these two new facilities were authorized to break ground last month, one in Texas and one in Louisiana. So I think you're going to see significant domestic production of the panels going forward.
Well, what is significant, I suppose, in any new industry are tax credits. And are there any tax credits given in this industry?
Yes, this is a huge issue, Mona, that makes solar so special. Yeah. The Biden administration passed the Inflation Reduction Act, or the IRA is what we call it. And the IRA provides 30 to 60%.
Wow, 30 to 60%.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. Yeah. Tax credits for each project. What are tax credits? It's the ability to monetize your future taxes in cash to fund and seed a project up front. So the projects I'm affiliated with, we're doing about 40 tax credits of our capital stack. So it's essentially free equity that doesn't have to be repaid to anybody as long as you execute your business plan and build your solar farm. So it's tremendous.
You know, where that's significant is the cash flow, because we have seen projects go down just because they just don't have cash flow, because it's not really always the assets. Investors often think that, all right, this particular project has these wonderful assets, but the assets are usually all with the bank. What really makes a difference for investors maybe wanting to leave a project early or just wanting their money back at all is cash flow. And I suppose here, you know, if you have tax credits, you have more cash flow.
You do. I'd break it down in two ways. So the investment tax credits help build a facility. The facility leads to the cash flow.
Yeah.
The cash flow from solar is unique and special because you have a power purchase agreement or PPA with mm-hmm. a utility, a municipality, a data center, somebody that is deemed by the financial markets as being a credit tenant, a secure purchaser of that power. So you've got a very secure cash flow stream, which is always, you know, do you have, you know, good, clean cash flow stream? And the answer here is yes. And it's long term. These contracts mm-hmm. go from 5 to 25 years. So it's like having a Walgreens or JP Morgan Chase as your tenant paying you cash flow every year going forward. So it's a substantially safe investment.
So is that the government paying you for the sustainable energy? How is the income coming
in? In some cases, yes. So mm-hmm. the government's giving you the tax credits, and that's both mm-hmm. the federal level. There are also community grants or programs as well at the city, county, and state level. So there's, you know, two different levels to be sure. But above and beyond that, you know, we're selling power to municipalities. A huge use, for example, of power is wastewater treatment facilities. Every municipality has to treat its wastewater. Those take huge amounts of electricity.
Yeah. Yeah.
So often you can get a 25-year power purchase agreement with the municipality.
Yeah.
And that's a great credit to have.
Oh, well, Mona, you were saying earlier too, in addition to cash flow, you know, a lot of these real estate projects do well because at the end of the day, if something happens, they do have assets, right? They have the land, they have something that can be given later. John, when you said it needs a lot of land for this, is the government providing that? Is it something that you have to provide? How does that work? Is there any assets involved?
There is. This is a great question. So in terms of the assets, the main asset really is the land and the panels. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. really simplistic compared to the hotels or theme parks or medical office or industrial buildings that are built. You've got, you know, land, and you can either ground lease the land or purchase the land. And then you get the panels and you construct the panels. And it's pretty, you know, single dimensional in terms of developing panels horizontally across your land.
But is solar investment secure? I still feel like it's a new area, John. I mean, how would you convince me that this is a secure investment?
The safest thing to talk about, Mona, is who's buying your power. And I won't do an investment or build a farm unless I have a power purchase agreement in hand up front with a credited purchaser, whether it be a municipality, a data center, or a utility. So once I have that in hand, I know I'm very safe going forward.
And these are long-term binding contracts that you're talking about?
Yeah,
absolutely. 5 to 25 years minimum.
Well, I definitely think it is easier to sell electricity than selling a hotel room.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, it's one of those.
We've done a lot of hotels and you're selling a hotel room by the night. Sure. You know, you sell the contract once up front to municipality. And you've got essentially a bond coupon that you're clipping every year going forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. And then you don't have to worry about, you know, issues like COVID or unions or recessions, because even in a recession, you still need power to light the lights in your house or watch your TV.
Exactly.
So it's a basic, you know, commodity or utility in life to have electricity.
Yeah. It's almost an immediate transferable commodity, or at least value proposition, whether you're spending the night in your room or at an EB5 resort. But you're going to spend the night in one of those places. But if you turn the light on one or the other, you need power at either one of those. And it sounds like power plants, especially these renewable plants, can get the power there.
But what about this scenario, John? Of course, we've seen all of these crazy storms with all the global warming. What happens if a tornado comes and just damages all of the panels in your house or in the building?
You have insurance. That's, you know, probably the biggest operating expense will be getting insurance. And it's not that significant, but it's an expense. If you think about, you know, running a solar farm, there's not much you need in the way of labor, except people to go and maintaining the panels, which means cleaning them and making sure the power connections are all addressed, landscaping to make sure there's no grass invading the panels to get most of the collection of the power. So there's really not much in the day-to-day operating expenses. So insurance really becomes the meaningful expense item, and that covers you for hurricanes or other natural disasters.
What if there is a hurricane and, you know, electricity goes out? Is this a way to kind of be a generator? Will it still produce power?
As long as you maintain your facility, it should be great. Mm-hmm. If you think about what happened with, I believe it's Hurricane Ian, just mm-hmm. hit the west coast of Florida. A lot of the different communities in Florida were without power, except for there's one community outside of Fort Myers that had solar panels, and they maintained their energy production the whole time. So it's been shown to, you know, survive hurricanes and be, you know, online when everybody else was off.
Yeah, I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's less complex than all these combined cycle or coal fire or whatever else we did to generate electricity.
That's right. If you need natural gas or oil or coal and you can't get it to your generation facility, mm-hmm. you're in trouble. But, you know, solar comes straight from the sun, so you should always be online.
Yeah.
Mm. And also the construction costs are much less.
Yes, compared to like a nuclear reactor or natural gas fired generator, this is much cheaper.
Well, before I ask you the $10 million question about the risks, I will say, how is it for, you know, as EB5 is all about job creation, how is it as a job creator?
Excellent. It's an excellent creator. The indirect induced jobs are tremendous because everybody needs electricity, and you do get substantial direct job creation from the construction project. So we believe there's about 30 plus jobs per investor in our projects.
Yeah, I think it's much higher than that, John, because there's a study done by the Department of Energy just out, and it says that by 2035, they believe that this area, the electricity sector, can add millions of new jobs across clean energy technologies, and potentially 500,000 to 1,500,000 people working in solar alone in certain areas. The challenge is that the solar job growth will quickly outpace the labor supply.
Who can work without power these days, though, right?
That's right.
But okay, so what are the risks involved?
Well, we try and factor out the risks, Mona, by first and foremost getting a power purchase agreement in place. If we don't have the power purchase agreement in place, we won't go forward and invest or construct a facility.
Can I ask, what is a power purchase agreement?
It's a 5 to 25 year contract with the
contract.
Municipality, utility, or data center to buy the power that's generated from your solar farm.
Mm-hmm. So do you get that ahead of going forward before you start with the project? How does that work out?
Yeah, we'll tie up a piece of property for the construction of a solar farm, but we won't close on the purchase or the ground lease until that power purchase agreement is signed and completed with the utility, municipality, data center, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So we won't go forward and risk, you know, our time, our investment, et cetera, unless we know we've got a user buying the power from us.
Mm-hmm. How regulated is the industry, John?
It is pretty regulated, Mona. You've got to, you know, work through the utilities, which are pretty much a regulated industry, to use their transmission lines to flow your power to the end user. So it's a very regulated industry. And that takes a lot of time. So one of the risks is, you know, how much time it takes to get your project approved to convey the power through the utility lines.
But does the cash flow come immediately, or do you have to wait a period of time before you start seeing any returns?
Depends upon, from the investor, if it's me doing it up front, it could be 2 years to get a piece of land tied up, entitled, and get the approvals in place and start construction. If it's a EB5 investor, it's 8 to 12 months, because we won't take on the EB5 investors' investment until we know we have a go-forward project that's approved by the utility, the government, and have the power purchase agreement in place. And then all we have to do is then construct the panels and connect that to the grid. So it's probably less than most EB5 investments, because they take, you know, a year to 2 years to construct.
Right. And I suppose it's one of those areas where you could give an early return if required.
Yes.
And you put so much of your own money into this, John. I suppose that is significant in itself. But can I ask, how many years have you had in the industry?
I only have about 2 years in this, Mona, but I've been in commercial real estate for over 30 years. And I've been everything from a Walt Disney theme park to medical office or industrial. And I got to tell you, I love this space because it's got the simplest construction of anything I've ever done in terms of just building the panels out. Yeah. And you've got guaranteed cash flow once you have that power purchase agreement in place. And you don't have to worry about when the power purchase agreement expires, are you going to find a new buyer for electricity? There's always going to be a need for power. If you're doing a 10-year industrial lease and you had Amazon as your tenant, you may be worried that Amazon's going to move out in 10 years because they could find a different space or a different business model. There's always going to be a need for power. So I think this is just a great space to be in.
So, John, you're saying the last couple of years you have found this easier than developing an animatronic theme park in a swamp?
Absolutely. Or doing a hotel during COVID time.
Oh, yeah, that too. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you've seen both ends.
I do want to ask, though, what are the chances or the likelihood of, again, the industry being taken over by a foreign country, say, like China? Because China really had the monopoly on solar for so long.
Well, there's two parts to that, Mona. So China has a monopoly on, again, the panel creation. And so that is one of the issues which I was starting to touch on before. We could have a risk where we don't have the panels to install and build the farm. There could be a backlog of getting to the panels. But again, there's more and more domestic production coming online to alleviate that potential problem. But we're not buying, as far as I'm aware, any electricity from China. We're not buying electricity from any other foreign country. Now, we may buy oil or gas or coal, but we're not buying electricity. All of our electricity is domestically produced, and that is not going to change. You know, we're not going to be buying electricity from Saudi Arabia or China anytime soon.
So literally, when the sun sets on China, it rises on the U.S., and you want to collect it.
That's right.
Oh, Mark.
The U.S. has a lot of land that we can, at least where we have that, and you can build all this, you know, the solar parts, panels, and having all that in there, at least we're not, like you said, not depending on other countries for the gas or oil, you know, what we've relied on all these years.
John, may I ask you, is there anywhere specific in the US, you know, as Rebecca says, you've got a lot of land, but is there anywhere specific that you prefer to build? Is it in a warmer climate, or does that really not make any difference?
We've been involved in projects in Texas, New Jersey, New York, California, and Hawaii.
Okay, all over the place.
And Hawaii pays the most for their power. It's a little harder to get something done in Hawaii. But they pay the most because they want to be green. They don't want to be dependent upon anybody else, and they don't want the pollution.
Right.
So they're very excited about getting it. In terms of regulation, Texas is probably the least regulated of all the states. So each state's got a little bit of a different nuance. There's some great communities in New Jersey and New York. They're desperate to do community solar and are willing to make the process very simple and pay a lot of money for it. So everything is a little bit different, but everybody, you know, sees the future as being reliant upon domestic production and not being dependent upon foreign countries and getting green and not having to worry about carbon footprint.
So, John, I'm going to be a little devil's advocate here. We saw a lot of projects in rural areas over the years where one of the biggest problems, especially with the fact that they were job creators, was that there wasn't enough people in the area to fill the jobs. And that led to a problem. Will we see that here?
I don't believe so. The important jobs are the jobs that are contracted with a general contractor to erect and construct the solar farm. The people that do this are dedicated people. They'll go to where the work is and they'll get the solar farms built. Once constructed, you really need very, very little labor to maintain a solar farm. There are even people using robots these days to clean the panels. They've got llamas and other type of livestock out there that eat the grass to keep the grass from overgrowing the panels. So there are all types of creative ways that are being pursued to maintain the panels and the production.
But are we looking at a blue-collar workforce or a more sophisticated one?
The upfront people to design and construct are more of a white-collar and blue-collar construction force because it is very technical and specific to get the panels constructed properly to maximize or optimize the solar radiation for the panels. But after they're constructed, it's more of a blue collar group that essentially is like window washers and lawnmowers to maintain the utilization of the panels. If you do have an issue with the maintenance of a panel, then you would parachute in somebody, you know, who specializes in, you know, maintaining the integrity of the systems.
What's the average time of construction? Because construction is huge in this, it seems. But what's the average time frame of the construction, the timeline?
You can typically get a farm up in 8 to 12 months, and maybe faster. It all comes down to putting, you know, more bodies on the job. And what's beautiful about doing solar, it's, again, one-dimensional. It's just putting the panels up and connecting them. When you think about doing a hotel, you've got to worry about foundations, the structural steel, elevator systems, electrical work, drywallers, finishers for paint, carpet, window treatments. There's so much more that goes into a hotel, and that's why it takes 2 years. Here, it's just one-dimensional, and you can throw more people at it to get it done faster. So it's a pretty efficient process doing solar farms.
I think you should do this for a living, John. You know, I love it.
I think so too, Mona. This is the future for me.
It's really exciting. I have to say, I really love projects like this. I love areas which is just away from your same old.
I know. And what I find interesting is that, you know, we're talking about countercyclical projects and gasoline is on that list. And I'm curious to see what the future has to bring on that. Maybe solar energy is going to be up there next.
You know, Tesla, I think it's BBD in China, are, you know, two of the largest car manufacturers now in the world. And every other historical car manufacturer, GM, Ford, et cetera, they're all trying to get into EVs as well.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
So, which makes sense, right? With all the uncertainty we've had with gas prices going up and down with distribution or storms or whatever. Yeah, the pluggable EVs have made sense.
And they're going to be a huge, you know, demand generator for more solar farm power to, you know, keep those charging stations, you know, ready to go.
John, you've mentioned the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed by the Biden administration quite a lot. One of my worries is that what happens if we do not have Biden again and somebody else comes in? Will another administration just dismantle everything?
I don't believe so. I think one of the fundamental principles is we need to be energy independent. And whether it be a, you know, a Republican administration like Trump again, wanted to be energy independent, they'll embrace solar. If it's the Biden administration or future Democrats, you know, they believe in energy independence. They believe in green energy. So I think they'll also endorse solar. So I don't see any administration trying to dismantle the progress here.
I kind of agree with you. I think that this is well and truly entrenched. And it was all about education. And that's what we need to get out there. As far as education goes, Rebecca, could you think of another EB5 project which has such defined outlets? Look, it's, you've got low costs, high job count.
High cash flow.
Yeah, in the rural areas.
Not even that, Mona, but I think it is the future. This is the way a lot of mindsets are changing to solar energy. And like you said, being dependent on ourselves, I think this is it.
John, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Not just a future, but a sustainable future, you know, powered by innovation with renewable energy. John, thank you for joining us on this journey on EB5 Investment Voice.
My pleasure.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.